Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for September the 23rd, 2018. Welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from City Hall to the State House all the way to the White House. Time to grab that Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee. We'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, fall has finally arrived.
Happy fall.
Happy fall.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
Boy, it sure did this morning, didn't it?
50 at O'Hare, 55 at the lakefront, but nice, clear skies.
That's a beautiful
Very
day.
Nice.
Beautiful day. And
our humidity down to, well, it's a little on the humid side, 86.
Yeah, but that'll probably burn off.
That will burn off, yeah.
No, this is today looks like just it's going to be a fantastic day. I mean, you can't ask for better weather than this.
No, no.
I was a good friend of the program, Eric Elk. His wedding was yesterday, and happiness to Eric and Kim. They did it out in Gallagher Way, out next to Wrigley Field.
Ah, okay.
And inside the stadium was a company outing from the Ozingas. And just before the ceremony starts, you can hear over the PA inside the stadium, Jim Cornelison doing the national anthem.
Hmm.
So we all stood and all applauded afterwards. So what better way to start a married life than
with the singing of the national anthem?
Yes, by Jim. Yes.
Now, does the bride have to remove her veil for that? Just kind of curious.
That's a good question. Well, it was before the ceremony of March. So
okay.
I can't give you any details on that part. But yeah, it was just a great time and a great evening to be outside too. I mean, but much happiness to the new couple. And okay, Cubs. You know, six now.
Magic number six, 2.5 game lead over the Brewers. The Cubs need to send the Pirates a thank you note, by the way.
Why is that?
They continue to manhandle the Brewers.
Well, that's great.
And that's very nice of them to do. Not a competitive game yesterday for the first couple of innings, and then it kind of got out of hand at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yeah, yeah. And I was always leery of this series, too. I mean,
yeah.
There's so much opportunity for the Sox to show their potential, and no doubt they're motivated, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's big crowds, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Yesterday was the biggest crowd of the two so far, and they're expecting another sellout today.
Well, as I was going to attend the wedding, I stopped in front of the marquee and took a selfie and said, oh, wait a minute, the game's on the south side.
Mm-hmm. Wrong side of town.
But, yeah, that's... now, the Brewers are going to be in the wild card, right?
Yeah, you would think. At this point,
I mean, just statistically, it looks like they would be.
Yeah, it's gonna be tight because that the National League West is also being hotly contested at this point. So you think maybe one of those teams might break in there at some point, but it's gonna be interesting to see how this all plays out because every game next Sunday. I was talking to you about this.
Yeah, right. I didn't know this.
So every
yeah.
game next Sunday gets played at 2 o'clock. So 3 o'clock on the East Coast and noon on the West Coast. 2 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone. And yeah, I mean it's good purpose because they want everybody to kind of finish at the same time if they can. So right now Milwaukee has the number one wild card by 2 games over St. Louis. Colorado knocking at the door, a game and a half back.
Okay, well. I thought St. Louis got put away. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I thought so too. They won their last two in a row, and that's how they've kind of snuck back in there. And Colorado on a winning streak as well.
Well, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting.
It always is, isn't it?
Yes, yes. That's what's great about it. Wow. That's what's great about it. And now with fall, of course, you know, Blackhawks with a couple of preseason games mm-hmm. under their belt. And, you know, it's still early. I'm not either right now. You know, I'm not either. Let's go. I'm always let's go Hawks, but I'm not concerned or anything like that. I don't think there's any reason to be that way. And but just to let you know, apparently there is reports of snow in Ontario today.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So just be aware of that kind of thing going on, because the weather will be here before you know it. And also, speaking of fall, I saw something that says that the weather outlook for like the next 30 days or so, below normal temperatures.
Hmm.
So,
well, if it's above 50, I'll still go out and play a little golf.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I was living
in shorts,
when I was living in Springfield, there was one year that the weather was moderate enough, I was able to play a round of golf at least once every month of the year.
That's amazing.
Isn't that something?
That's pretty cool.
And you're only talking, you know, 175 miles south of here.
Yeah.
You could get away with that, milder temperatures in Springfield. 50s, 60 maybe.
Even, you know, yeah, even 48, you know, something like that, as long as it's not windy.
By the way, we've seen low temperatures in some of the outlying suburbs in the 40s here overnight.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. Well, you know, with clear skies, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, mm-hmm. at night.
Yep.
Nothing to radiate the temperature off of, and it's just, I'm excited to get out today. I mean, and...
Oh, I love fall. This is, and it's a brief season when you think about it, you know?
I know, but it's like the best.
But it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, spring is short, usually. Summer,
what spring?
Summer is
We don't have
long.
Spring.
Summer is long. Winter is long.
Winter is very long.
And the fifth season, construction, is also very long.
Well, Andy, your spring's different than ours because you're at spring training.
Yeah, I get to go to Arizona, which is just a real crying shame.
Yes.
I know you're feeling very weepy for me, and I take the clubs. So
maybe we should think of a remote for spring training next season.
I can't think of a better idea. I mean, that's fantastic. Because
and on a weekly basis.
Well, yeah. I mean, why just do it once?
Not just once.
Yeah, well, yeah, with all the effort it takes to do it.
May as well just keep it set up, yeah.
All right. Well,
we have all the gear. We're at Sox Park now. Just take it down there.
It'll be back here before you know it. And we can earmark it for Arizona.
I'm for that.
Who do we need to talk to?
Certainly not me. But I'll pass
let's
it
just
along.
Do it. Let's just go.
What are they going to do? Right?
Yeah. Let's just go.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I'll meet you there.
Mark it down. Yeah, Andy, let me know the dates for this. So.
Yeah, it starts in February when pitchers and catchers report, but we'll probably want to be there when the games start.
Yeah.
So that'll be like the first week of March.
The only problem is we'll be acclimated to the time change over there.
True.
So that could make it a little bit more difficult.
They're
right?
They're a smart state that doesn't change time. They stay on one time all
That's
year.
Right. So That's they go, right. They don't spring ahead or fall.
Yeah, they go from Pacific daylight to Mountain Standard, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure the iPhone alarm will work.
Oh, it definitely will. It'll self-update. Yeah, you'll be good.
Okay, good. That's good to know. Well, now that we've got our plans scheduled for next spring.
Get some cheap flights now, too.
Oh, that's right. Let's book it now.
We're booking several weeks in advance.
Oh, this is sounding better and better.
It's all advantageous. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Cassara's fielding your calls. We're at 312-981-7200. You can text us at 312-981-7200. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, all one word. We're on Twitter @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is thinking of the seasonal change and getting the oil changed in the newsroom Zamboni. Remember, you can find all our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break on this bright and sunny Sunday morning. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River and the beautiful sunrise this morning over the lake. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. And, of course, the news was dominated and still dominated by the fate of President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, over allegations from Christine Blasey Ford that he sexually assaulted her when both were teens. The president on Twitter questioned why the FBI wasn't called in 36 years ago, even though the FBI doesn't investigate sexual assault charges. He also said if the attack was as bad as she says, why wasn't law enforcement called then? That evoked a lot of criticism from women's rights advocates. Here's Trump's initial satisfaction of the earlier FBI vetting of Kavanaugh.
Well, the FBI has been very involved with respect to Justice Kavanaugh. They know Justice Kavanaugh very well. They've investigated him, I guess, six times, and they've investigated him for this hearing. Look, if she shows up and makes a credible showing, that'll be very interesting, and we'll have to make a decision. But I can only say this. He is such an outstanding man. Very hard for me to imagine that anything happened.
But California Democratic Senator Kamala Harris, a former prosecutor, says she believes Ford's allegations in an interview with CBS.
I believe her. Listen, first of all, anybody who comes forward at this point to be prepared to testify in the United States Senate against someone who is being nominated to one of the most powerful positions in the United States government, that takes an extraordinary amount of courage. And frankly, you know, I have personally prosecuted sexual assault cases, and my concern is, and she knows this, she is putting herself out there knowing that they're going to try and excoriate her. And she's doing it, I believe, because she knows that this is an important matter. It's a serious matter who serves on that court. And she has the courage to come forward. She has nothing to gain.
Now, Democrats mounting pressure for the FBI to investigate, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Senate Republicans offered both Ford and Kavanaugh a chance to be before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Originally, that was on Monday. Extensions were granted by Chuck Grassley, the Republican from Iowa who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee. It appears that that testimony could happen on Thursday, although negotiations are still going on today. Illinois Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth, though, was on CNN explaining why she believes the FBI should investigate.
I think what we need to do is we need to hear from both sides, and this is why it's so important for the FBI to investigate these allegations so that it doesn't become a he said, she said kind of an issue. Again, I learned about this through my work with military sexual trauma. This is why we must have an independent investigation into it, and we must trust the victim as they come forward, and we must take this with all seriousness and not let partisanship get into the way of really finding out the truth. This is, after all, somebody that's being nominated to the highest court in the land for the rest of his life.
That's Illinois' Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
I'm disappointed in is Mitch Trubisky.
And his new name is Trubisky because he misses so many throws.
This kid is not an NFL top-flight quarterback.
If it's a good dog, it'll bite when it's a pup. We're getting gummed.
The Hemp and OB Show with Kaz is where Bears fans start and finish their Bears game. Listen this Sunday afternoon pregame against the Cardinals.
Bad football team.
That team couldn't play that.
The best Bears coverage is on 720 WGN. Sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
It kept getting hotter all afternoon, and that's when I realized my air conditioner just wasn't working. I've been hearing the ads with Dick and Elizabeth Hochschild, owners of American Weathermakers, so I put in a call, and I sat down to watch my favorite Sunday evening news magazine show. And before the show was over, American Weathermakers was at my door.
We're the 60-Minute Men. If your air conditioner breaks down, day or night, we'll be there in 60 minutes or give you a free $60 gift card for repairs. And we never charge for travel or overtime. Plus, we offer a lifetime warranty on our repairs. Call us for details.
And don't forget, we have the best prices on repairs and air conditioning equipment every day. You'll fall in love with American Weathermakers, too.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
Call toll-free.
855-955-8255.
HVAC.
For cool offers, visit our website, AmericanWeathermakers.com.
Prospect Heights condos didn't have fire sprinklers. Automatic fire sprinklers protect your family, business, and property. Visit SprinklerFitterChicago.org. Save a life today. SprinklerFitterChicago.org.
Oh, hello. Lincoln here. You know, these days, you just can't believe everything you read on the internet. Fact is, today we find ourselves fighting a cybersecurity war. So it's important you remember online safety measure tips available at ready.illinois.gov. With malware for none and cyber protection for all, this is your humble servant, Abraham Lincoln.
Sponsored by AIMA.
It's time. Time to join the millions of people that meet happy with Zoom video conferencing. Zoom gives you flawless video, crystal clear audio, and instant sharing across any mobile, tablet, or desktop device. But the best thing about Zoom? It just works. So ditch the distractions, join the movement, and meet happy with Zoom video conferencing. Visit Zoom.us to set up your free account today. That's Zoom.us, Zoom video conferencing.
Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with mayoral candidate Gary Chico, an attorney who's held a variety of governmental positions. We'll talk about his campaign. Right now, though, it's 7:30. Time for the news. Here's Dave Schwann.
A 7-month-old baby boy is dead after a fire in the Englewood neighborhood this morning. It broke out around 1:30 in the 1700 block of West 59th. Authorities say the fire was accidental, perhaps caused by a malfunctioning stove. Another person in that home, a 51-year-old man, is in critical condition. 7 people have been displaced. All of them were living in the home. Forecasters say Tropical Storm Kirk is continuing to move west across the eastern Atlantic, but doesn't pose a threat to land. An update from the National Hurricane Center said Kirk was 400 miles south-southwest of the Cabo Verde Islands, moving at about 16 miles an hour. Prosecutors will dismiss the convictions of 18 more people that resulted from investigations by a corrupt police sergeant and his crew in Chicago. That brings the total number of convictions linked to then-Sergeant Ronald Watts to 42. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Hi, Barry Sterner, founder of Townstone Financial. I guarantee you can have confidence when calling me at 312-896-2110 or going to townstone.com that our only interest is getting you the best refinance deal available and to make sure your home purchase closes on time and without headaches. Don't pay too much. Townstone will compete on closing costs and interest rates with anyone. So do yourself a favor and check with Townstone before you refinance or buy. If you are starting a new home purchase, Townstone is the only place to contact because we not only help borrowers with great credit, large down payments to streamline their home purchase and close quickly, but we're also experts in helping borrowers with the so-called difficult loans. First-time home buyers, we have a program for you. Are you self-employed or a business owner? We have a special program for you too. Had a BK, short sale, or deed in lieu at least 12 months ago? We also have a new program to get you back into your dream house too. So call 312-896-2110 or go to townstone.com. That's townstone.com.
Townstone Financials, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida, Illinois, mortgage licensee 6629 and NMLS 136639, equal housing lender.
Consider it done with ABC. Right now, get your ultimate furnace tune-up for just $89. ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Book your appointment today at 4abc.com and consider it done.
WGN Sports, Andy Mazur.
Javi Baez homered, and the Cubs took advantage of a fielding miscue to even up the crosstown series with the White Sox with an 8-3 win on the south side. Ryan Lamar misjudging a fly ball in the left that led to the tie-breaking runs in the fifth. The Cubs' magic number now down to 6 after the Brewers lose to the Pirates, leading the Central back to 2.5 games. Series finale coming up this afternoon. I'll have your pregame at 12:35. Ed and DJ, the first pitch at 1:10 here on WGN. Bears taking on the Cardinals in Arizona today. Bears 1-1 on the season. The Cardinals are 0-2. Bears defense leading the NFL with 10 sacks through the first couple of games of the season. You can join Hap, OB, and Cos for their postgame show, 6:30 here on WGN. Among the action in college football yesterday, 8th-ranked Notre Dame over Wake Forest, that is 56-27. Number 19, Michigan over Nebraska, 56-10. 24th-ranked Michigan State beats Indiana, 35-21. Number 18, Wisconsin over Iowa, 28-17. And number 4, Ohio State blows out Tulane, 49-6. Boston College upset by Purdue, 30-13. PGA FedEx Cup at the Tour Championship after 3 rounds. A familiar name atop the leaderboard. Tiger Woods, a 3-shot lead over Rory McIlroy and Justin Rose. Woods 12-under for the tournament after shooting a 65 yesterday. He leads the tournament after 54 holes by himself for the first time in 5 years. on the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and White Sox baseball. Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
WGN traffic on Lakeshore Drive in the south portion of the city. It is closed in both directions between 31st and 67th, and back up from 67th to 31st until noon today for the Chicago Half Marathon. Our expressways, tollways, moving well for the most part. Watch for a disabled vehicle, however, on the eastbound lanes of 8094 at Burr Street in Gary. A disabled vehicle is blocking the right lane there. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. What a way to start fall. Sunny today, high in the mid-70s. Clear tonight, low in the upper 50s. Morning sunshine for tomorrow, increasing cloudiness during the afternoon. Highs in the mid-70s, a little cooler near the lake, and perhaps some showers later in the day or at night. O'Hare has 50, Midway 52, Lakefront 55 under clear skies. I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and this is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
7:35 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. We're talking a little bit this morning about the Brett Kavanaugh status, the fate of his nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. And throughout the past week, the president growing frustrated and questioning why Democrats didn't come forward sooner with the allegations against Kavanaugh.
We want to go through a process. We want to make sure everything is perfect. Everything is just right. I wish the Democrats could have done this a lot sooner because they had this information for many months and they shouldn't have waited till literally the last days. They should have done it a lot sooner. But with all of that being said, we want to go through the process. One thing I will say is that, as I understand it, Judge Kavanaugh spent quite a bit of time with Senator Feinstein, and it wasn't even brought up at that meeting, and she had this information. So you would have thought certainly that she would have brought it up at the meeting, not wait till everything's finished and then have to start a process all over again.
So the president talks about wanting a process, but on Friday, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell sought to calm concerns from conservatives over Kavanaugh and told them to stand by the Republicans and the embattled nominee.
You've watched the fight. You've watched the tactics, but here's what I want to tell you. In the very near future, Judge Kavanaugh will be on the United States Supreme Court. So, my friends, keep the faith. Don't get rattled by all of this. We're going to plow right through it and do our job.
So, there's the process, and then there's the process. Well, we're going to switch gears now, and joining me here in the Allstate Skyline studio is Gary Chico, an attorney and candidate for mayor of Chicago. Gary, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Nice to be with you and your listeners, Rick.
I could go through the litany of positions you've held.
Okay.
but we only have, this segment. So, chief of staff to Mayor Daley, president of the Chicago School Board, president of the Park Board, chair of the City Colleges, chair of the State Board of Education, now mayor?
I hope to be. I definitely want to see a safer and stronger Chicago. I'm very concerned that I don't see the opportunities that were afforded to my family and me and my children being available to everyone for lots of reasons. I mean, number one is fear of crime and violence in our neighborhoods. I'm really worried about that. I've lived in just about every neighborhood in Chicago. McKinley Park, Brighton Park, Edgewater, Rogers Park. I can keep going almost as long as the number of positions I've had. But I think I have a feel and a knowledge of Chicago and the people that make it up. I think that is unique to me, and I'm very proud of that. I also, I've gone to the Chicago public schools. My parents went to the public schools. My kids went to the public schools. And I hope my grandchildren go to the Chicago public schools. Education is critical. It was critical for me in giving me the start that I got. It's got to be there for everybody. But it's not those jobs that you mentioned earlier, everyone that I was called upon to serve in, I answered that call, and we got results. City of Chicago, We hired more police. We made the streets safer. We had some of the highest bond ratings in the last probably half century. When I was at the Chicago Public Schools, we generated surpluses. We rebuilt the buildings. We gave people hope and faith that the public school system could work again. We started the academic resuscitation of the Chicago Public Schools. A lot of that is the foundation for which you see improvements coming today. I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud to have served at the Park District, where we rebuilt parks and neighborhoods. And I'm equally proud of the Chicago City Colleges, where we began the turnaround or the reinvention of community college education, which is absolutely vital today for people who are going to get a meaningful job in this economy. So I'm very pumped. I'm very passionate about my city. And I hope that the people of Chicago give me the privilege of being their mayor.
Now, of course, you ran for this position 8 years ago.
I did.
Finished second with about a quarter of the vote to Mayor Emanuel. What lessons did that run then give you for this run now, if any?
Well, first of all, people got to know me a lot more than they may have before that. I mean, getting 140,000, 145,000 votes is no small feat. We raised about $4.5 million in about 4 or 5 months. I got to learn from people directly beyond what I already knew. When you go through a campaign, it's like time travel. I mean, you're meeting so many people so quickly, hearing about so many issues. It's really a gift, and I said that at that time. What you have to do is learn from every experience, whether it's positive or negative, and build from that and go forward. That's exactly what we're doing right now. We know what we have to do to have the resources to run this campaign. We'll have the millions of dollars in our war chest to be able to get our message out to everybody throughout this city. I think we'll have the agenda very honed based on listening to what people want and seeing what people are going through. I think you're going to see this campaign hit the ground running right away.
You touched on the issues of crime, which I think is a preeminent issue because it is now prevalent throughout the city. What's the answer?
Well, there's no single answer. We all know that. We've learned that over the years. I've proposed the mayor's office for violence prevention and reduction. Why? From my experience, having served as chief of staff to Mayor Daley, who I like, I learned a lot. And I learned that on any major complex project, you can't have disparate silos working on a problem. This office that I've proposed will have the police department, Department of Family Services, Department of Planning, private social service agencies, and others working together to not only conceive, implement, and account for results in bringing down our violence. We know we have to take another look at the police force. I said 8 years ago that I thought you were going to have an attrition problem, which was going to deplete manpower, and you're seeing that. You've seen it. You're moving officers from one district to another. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul. You don't have enough people in the detective ranks. We haven't kept pace with our facilities either. The training facilities for police and firefighters is archaic. And you can go out to the College of DuPage right now and find modern training facilities in DuPage County. In Chicago, we're fighting about it. Look, I know people have a lot of issues with trust with police and the police with the community right now, but we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I don't believe in forcing projects down the throat of communities that don't want them. On the other hand, this $100 million facility that's been proposed is critical to make sure that we have the best trained police force in America. That project's got to be built, if not in the community where it's proposed. Let's move it and let's get it underway. But it's not just about police. We know it can't just be about police. I think people in Chicago's neighborhoods, many of those suffering through the violence, have given up a little bit. We have to show them that that's not the way. There are several initiatives out there right now that I think are showing early promise, like the Ready Initiative from the Heartland Alliance. What they're doing there is they probably have about 200 people thus far recruited, many of them from gangs, to be recruited into regular, positive jobs, cutting the grass, picking up boxes, serving meals to the elderly. People, what we're finding is that people are getting esteem from a regular paycheck and they're enjoying themselves. You can leave the gang life and go into a positive experience. Same thing with the Safe Haven organization on Chicago's West Side. When I was in the mayor's office, we started by giving them the landscaping contract to do all of Chicago's medians and boulevards. Why is that important? Their workforce is made up from people who have gone to prison, have a hard time getting back into the working world. It also is made up of people who are homeless And I see you're going to go right down State Street and see them gathering up in the morning with their trucks and their equipment to start doing work. This teaches and shows people that positive things can happen. You can't stop there. We also have to show people that we're going to reinvest obsessively in their communities. We haven't done that. Downtown's a great shining example of what Chicago can be. That has got to migrate a lot more so than it has to date in our neighborhoods.
And that seems to be one significant failing that we've seen.
Well, it can work. I mean, look, I've been a lawyer for 30 years, and most of the time I've been lawyering, I've been doing real estate development in communities in Chicago. Building hospitals, schools, commercial facilities, warehouse and distribution. I know how to do this from the ground up. I think it could be something that's a secret weapon of ours, if you will, to bring development to the neighborhoods. And what's that going to do? It's not only going to change the physical appearance. I mean, let's go down Chicago and Madison right now. We'll take those two streets and go west. And you'll see buildings that haven't been touched for 40 and 50 years with the scissor gates in front of an old burned out building. We have to get rid of that. Let's show people some hope. Let's show them we care, and let's show them that investment.
How do you, along with that kind of investment, but also how do you spur the business growth that is also needed to bring jobs
well,
to those
areas? Well, my spurt of growth in those neighborhoods is going to be by business. There's coffee shops. The retailing has changed dramatically over the years. You see Amazon Go right here in the loop with the facilities. Let's talk to Amazon Go, not just about their mega facility, but maybe some of those kinds of places in our neighborhoods along streets. Once you get critical mass going on a block or two, things will take off, and people from those neighborhoods will be working in those facilities.
We're speaking with Gary Chico, candidate for mayor of Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline studio with mayoral candidate Gary Chico. And Gary, obviously we touched on this issue of education and the importance of that. With the school closings that occurred and those neighborhoods, what do we do about that?
I think we missed an opportunity in closing those schools to repurpose the buildings in the communities right away. It's one thing to close a school and give some shock and trauma to a neighborhood. It's an entirely other thing to leave that building sitting there vacant for the years that have gone by now. There are many possible purposes that you can use those buildings for. Job retraining. I've mentioned some programs earlier in the show which could probably use a facility to help run a larger scale program. And if I'm mayor, the city will get behind those kinds of initiatives in a way like they haven't before. We're obviously going to need a place to do that. I think that's what you have to do with the schools that have been closed. We've waited way too long for those buildings to be repurposed.
But it wasn't wrong to close those schools?
Well, I think, look, what happens is if you don't right-size the portfolio of the Chicago Public Schools, you wind up taking from children who need resources. If you have an enormous 300,000-500,000 square foot building with 75 to 100 students in it, you have to carry all of that to support that small a population of students, then those schools which are full don't get their fair share. And so I think we have to be really smart in looking at the size of our facilities, the amount of our populations. I think it was your paper that wrote about, I think it was editorialized today, about 150,000 seats that are not filled. Well, look, we're losing people in this city, and that's because of the violence issue, largely because of the violence issue. We have to straighten that out first. That's job number one. But they go hand in hand with the Chicago Public Schools. So I think when you look at what needs to take place in having the right amount of buildings, the right amount of staff for the right amount of students, you'll have resources to make sure that we're paying teachers good wages, that we don't have as much of a problem making our pension payment. And that's what I'm about. And most importantly, Rick, I want to be a mayor who stands for every parent in this city getting a top-flight quality school accessible to them. What we're seeing are a couple of things right now. I see parents all the time that come up. They come up to me and say, I have a sixth grader, and I don't know where to go to high school. I'm on your roulette wheel, and maybe I'll get lucky, and maybe I won't. I said, well, that's unacceptable. I mean, I was happy to start the selective enrollment program in Chicago and really get it going on top of what we had with Whitney and Lane. I was happy to bring the IB program from about one site to 40 sites, and I was really happy to bring charter schools into being and also have advanced placement expand dramatically. We have to look at expanding that set of options because that's where our parents and their students are going. And they're going to long distances to get them. Look, people are voting with their feet. I'm not making this up. You now have more mobility within the Chicago public student population than you've ever had before because people are going to where they want to go for what they think is the best education for their children. It also could be something that has to do with a particular program offering that may be in a different part of the city. Maybe it's the engineering STEM programs, which I actually worked with Rahm Emanuel on. I was very, very proud to do that by bringing Chicago companies in to sponsor Chicago public high schools with engineering STEM programs. It could be fine arts. I know kids traveling from across the city to go to fine arts schools and performing arts schools. So I believe in giving people top quality options without them having to pull their hair out. This is something we're going to stop in Chicago, and we're going to keep people in this city.
Keeping people in the city, vitally important, as well as finding ways to pay for the city.
Sure.
And we certainly know what lies ahead, particularly with our pension problems.
Sure.
What do we do? Well, do we have any other choice but to pay up?
Well, I think there's a lot of things you can do. We just talked about it, for example, within the school context. I mean, if you right-size the portfolio of buildings and students and staff, you should be able to make your payroll, give a good wage to teachers, and handle our pension obligations. We have to look at the same thing at the city of Chicago. And I believe in doing this collaboratively with labor. I'm not going to cram down anything on anybody in the first instance. At the end of the day, don't worry about me. I'll make the call, which is right for the citizens of Chicago. But there's an awful lot of discussion that needs to take place about what we do about the size of our staff, the benefits and wages we pay. But I want to do that with labor. We don't have to do that in a vacuum. And I think we'll have a better city for it. There's a lot of options with regard to revenue, to raise revenue. I talked about a casino and a casino license 8 years ago. I don't think that's off the table. I think those kinds of things have to be looked at. And I think we have to look at ways to reduce expenses. I'll give you one that's giant, staring us in the face. I talked about the need to have the best trained police force in the United States of America. When you do that, you won't have an annual tab of $500 million for police judgments. We're going to get away from that, okay? It's costing us a fortune. It's costing us not only in terms of the money we're paying, but the emotional trauma involved with these cases. There are lots of ways to look at making this budget work going into the future. I believe in multi-year planning, and we're going to do that.
The consent decree on the police department.
Just finished making my way through it. It's about 270 pages.
Yes.
It's a monster. But, having been in the mayor's office, I'm used to the issues involved with police. And if you read this report, for example, when I was in the mayor's office, we began community policing in Chicago in the early 90s. It was a fabulous rollout. Everybody liked it. Communities were coming into police districts, meeting with the police officers, the beat cops, and the exchange of information and rapport that was built up was outstanding. That has gone away. The consent decree's first chapter calls for the reinstitution of community policing. Spot on. It also calls for that kind of level of training I talked about. It calls for hiring and promotion. We need a more diverse police force. I mean, there are a number of topics in there that are just common sense and have to be dealt with. Transparency in police disciplinary procedures, absolutely necessary. The reason I called for the mayor's office of violence prevention and reduction is to give that group the responsibility to oversee and coordinate on behalf of the city its compliance with that consent decree. I actually think it's a document we should work with and make our city better.
The fact, though, that we needed a consent decree?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, things have gotten bad over the last 7, 8, 9, who knows how many years. It's been going on for a while. Things have gotten very bad, and the trust has broken down between the police and the neighborhoods. We have to rebuild that. The attorney general felt it necessary to bring this action in federal court. This would be a federal court overseen consent decree. The mayor, I think to his credit, stepped up and said, let's get this done. We have to rebuild the trust between the police and our communities. Look, the police, they put their lives on the line. I was out at a parade in South Chicago last week, and somebody got out of hand. I think there may have even been a gun involved, and there were 8 squad cars there like that. We need that kind of responsiveness from the police to keep us safe. But at the same time, if the neighborhoods, if the people in the neighborhoods don't feel that they're getting a fair shake, we're not going to get this done. So I believe that the consent decree is something to work with. Let's spring off of it, and let's make things better.
Just in the closing moments we have, in this massive field, which could still be growing.
Really? I didn't hear that.
Well, and obviously I think it will shrink at some point, but nevertheless, how do you message yourself and differentiate yourself to the voters?
I'm a through and through Chicagoan my entire life. I mentioned those communities I've lived in, my family's lived in, my mom and dad, even my grandparents when they came from Mexico, Greece, and Lithuania came to this city. This is the one they chose. You couple that kind of life experience with professional experience, having been chief of staff to the mayor, chairman of the Chicago schools, chairman of the state school board, where we brought hundreds of millions of dollars into public education, the park district president, and the community colleges president, and a practicing lawyer. You put that all together, I think I'm the most experienced candidate to take on these tough issues, reduce violence, make our school system better, and rebuild our communities. I'm ready to hit the ground on day one. I'm battle-tested. We don't have time for on-the-job training and where we are right now. We're at a very critical point in Chicago. I also want to get away from the politics of division. I don't want to be... I'm proud of my heritage, okay? I just told you, I'm Mexican-American. I'm Greek and Lithuanian. I'm very proud of that. I'm going to work with everybody. I'm tired of being pigeonholed. I got to be this. We have to have the candidate for them. The candidate for them. I don't believe in that. I want to work for every Chicagoan with every Chicagoan. That's what our candidacy is going to be about. I think when you put all that together, we easily distinguish ourselves as the most capable, ready to go on day one.
That's Gary Chico, attorney, candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. Gary, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. Last week, the president put out a video tweet to thank the first responders for their work on Hurricane Florence and later Tropical Storm Florence. But in this video tweet, which is something the White House says he's going to be doing more of, I want you to listen how he describes the storm.
I just want to thank all of the incredible men and women who have done such a great job in helping with Florence. This is a tough hurricane. One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water. Rarely have we had an experience like it.
One of the wettest we've seen from the standpoint of water. Yes, keep that in mind. The president, under continued fire, including a New York Times report, the Times reporting that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein gave thoughts of wearing a wire and also of seeking a 25th Amendment uprising from the cabinet following James Comey's firing at the FBI. That's something that Rosenstein's denying. People are saying, is this an excuse now for the president to fire him? But throughout all this, a pro-Trump dark money group, America First Policies, seeking to turn attention away from these myriad controversies with their new ad.
President Trump is shaking up Washington, and the establishment doesn't like it, resorting to anonymous leaks and cowardly attacks. D.C. insiders betraying our president. Americans stand with President Trump. The best economy in decades. Record jobs. Wages up. Historic tax cuts. Bad trade deals coming to an end. Our military stronger than ever. Our enemies on the run. America stronger, safer, more prosperous. President Trump is making America great again.
And that's from the America First Policies group. Well, we're going to bring things back to Chicago now on the Sunday Spin. Joining me now on the phone is Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association, and always good to talk to Sam Toya, particularly with Chicago Gourmet just around the corner. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. So this has got to be one of your busiest and probably favorite times of the year with the Chicago Gourmet. All kinds of things going on and on a daily basis.
Yes, we got a lot going on. This is the beginning week of Chicago Gourmet. This is our 11th year doing it at Millennium Park. And as I always say, Chicago Gourmet is the premier food and wine show here in Chicago. It's better than any throughout the country. I don't care what they say in South Beach or Pebble Beach. We have the best food and wine show. And like you said, it's our 11th year. We have 7 new ancillary events. And the theme this year is Rock the Fork.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So you, are there still tickets available for these various events?
Yeah. Well, the Saturday show, starts this week. And we have, like I said, 7 ancillary events, which still available. We have Sunday tickets. So, go online to www.chicagogourmet.org and buy your Sunday tickets. And we still have tickets to one of our ancillary events, Global Streets, and that's Saturday, September 29th from 8 to 11 at the Harris Theater rooftop. So again, Sunday, September 30th, tickets are available, and Global Streets are available on Saturday, September 29th.
What's the Global Streets?
I'm glad you asked. So that's the Saturday, September 29th from 8 to 11 at the Harris Theater rooftop in Millennium Park, and it's going to be food, music, culture from throughout the world. We have Bollywood dancers, we're going to have mariachi players, we're going to have chefs like Rohini Day and Lorena Garcia and Takashi and Diana Davila, having different kind of food. So it's like street food from, South America, Europe, Asia with music, because that's, like I said, the theme this year is Rock the Fork.
Okay, so this shows how bad I am, because I'm looking at Global Streets, Streats. And I'm thinking it's a typo, except it's street food from, it's eat food, street food.
That's from, right. Yes. Street food from around the world.
Boy, exactly. you guys are always too clever for me over there.
No, I don't know about that. We're just, we just try to make it fun.
Well, and truly, I mean, that does sound like fun, by the way. That's just sounds like a great entertaining event, the Global Streets. But, I mean, Chicago Gourmet is really, to me, kind of the greatest reflection of just how important and diverse our restaurant industry is in this city.
Absolutely, Rick. We have over 240 chefs participating. We have like from Stephanie Iser to Rick Bayless, Graham Elliott, to name a few. So we have the celebrity chefs, but we have all these chefs throughout the city from restaurants in Pilsen to Avondale to Hyde Park to Logan Square to Lakeview to Uptown to Rogers Park. So we have restaurateurs, participating in Chicago May from throughout our great city. Remember, we have 77 communities, and we try to get restaurateurs participating, like I said, from Rogers Park to Chatham and all the way back to Logan Square. So we have a lot of great chefs participating. So you can go there and get, little taste from these restaurants and, see if you want to go back and, enjoy the restaurants.
Well, that's it. That's what I love, too, is you get to sample all of these different kinds of foods, and then you find a place, and it's like, okay, I'm going to go back there. I'm absolutely going back to this place. I mean, it's...
Absolutely.
But, of course, that's true with just about every taste I have out there. So I still haven't been able to hit all of them. But we're speaking with Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association. We're going to talk more about the restaurant industry in Chicago, the state, and as well as concerns about some legislation. We're going to talk to Sam more about that. But first, time for a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me on the phone is Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association. We're talking about Chicago Gourmet, the fantastic food festival that kicks off this coming week. And we talk about, Sam, about all of the great diversity of the restaurants that exist in this city, but also... I mean, I think people tend to forget how important it is to the economy of the city as well as the state. Sam?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, there we go. Sorry about that.
I was just saying we are the largest private sector employer here in the state of Illinois with over 577,000 jobs in the food service restaurant industry. And there's 26,000 restaurants throughout the state of Illinois. And last year we did $25.2 billion in sales. Think how much sales tax that produces.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this is obviously, you know, with the restaurants that we have in the city, too, just how important that is as an economic driver, but also as an employment driver.
Yes. You know, the restaurant industry is still one of the last industries that you can still enter without a college degree and get to middle class. Think of all, you know, think of all the people that when the restaurant started as a busboy and ended up owning their own restaurants, or started as a bellhop and ended up being general managers of hotels. So the hospitality industry is, like I said, a great entry level job that you can get to the middle class by, you know, working your way up.
How are we doing as far as the overall hospitality industry? I mean,
You know, I got to give a lot of credit to Mayor Emanuel. When he took office in 2011, we had 39 million visitors here to the city of Chicago. Last year, we hit 56 million visitors, and that's all because of conventions, tourism, and culinary tourism. Millennials grew up with the, you know, the Food Network, the Travel Channel, and it's all about an experience. So look at Chicago Gourmet. That's an experience. Look, we brought the James Beard Awards here, which is known as the Oscars of the food world. I mean, that was just a crowning achievement of Mayor Emanuel. So he knows how important it was to put guests in bed and diners in seats because it drives the economy. And, you know, they always say, you know, central business district is like 560,000 people that work in the central business district, but they live throughout the 77 communities here in the city of Chicago. So, and we have restaurants in every one of these 77 communities, but a lot of them do work downtown in, you know, the Central Loop or River North. You know, this is all true, but they live in Portage Park, or they live in Austin, or they live in Pullman. But, you know, but they come down to work in, like I said, in the Central Business District, but there's restaurants in every community. So the restaurant industry is very important to the economy of the city of Chicago.
So when it comes for things like tourism, I mean, what do you do as head of the Restaurant Association to help in that tourism effort?
All right. So obviously Chicago Gourmet is very, very important. When you can bring guests, you know, guests into town, they go to eat at restaurants. So between Chicago Gourmet, James Beard Awards, as I mentioned, the Oscars of the food world, we have that in May every year. We have the National Restaurant Association show that's been here for over 70-something years, and that brings in over 70,000 people to the National Restaurant Association show every year in May. We have Taste of Chicago. So by doing all these culinary events, that brings people into the city of Chicago to visit all our great restaurants. So that's what we're always working on at the Restaurant Association, how to get more people to come to our great city.
I know that you've talked about this before, you have some concerns about the what's known as the Fair Work Week Ordinance, and maybe you could kind of give listeners an idea what's being talked about and your opposition to it.
Absolutely. So, you know, these mandates, you know, are really hard on businesses. You know, we always say at the Restaurant Association, we want to be at the table. We do not want to be on the menu. You know what I mean? We always said there should be a reasonable increase to the minimum wage. We had that. Then we had, you know, the paid sick leave. And now they're talking about the Fair Work Week. But this one especially, is a misguided proposal that will destroy workplace flexibility and hurt a broad spectrum of industries that drive Chicago economy. You know, because you have to, so you need to schedule, let me explain this a little bit so your listeners understand. On the Fair Work Week, you're going to need to schedule employees 2 weeks out and pay a penalty if you change their schedule in any way. So if you and I are working at a restaurant, Rick, and I call you and say, "Hey, Rick, will you pick up my schedule? Will you pick up my shift tonight? And I'll, you know, pick yours up on Wednesday." We can't do that anymore. The restaurant would be fined. They would be fined because, you know, you're supposed to have a 2 week out schedule. So you and I, as teammates, can't even exchange, you know, schedule. People get in the restaurant industry for the flexibility. And there was a Gallup poll that was taken. Listen to this, Rick. There was a Gallup poll that was taken that 67% of Americans working variable hours say their flexible schedules do not cause hardship. That's why they get into industry, because they might be going to school. They might, you know, be acting in some of our great theaters throughout the city of Chicago. They like the flexibility. But with this Fair Work Week, you got to post the schedule 2 weeks out.
Where does that issue stand in the city council?
Well, right now it's out there. It was, you know, it's been proposed for over a year. We're trying to educate elected officials that this won't just hurt the restaurant industry. Think about this. This will hurt film and TV productions. How can you schedule 2 weeks out? This will hurt theaters, construction, manufacturing. How about this? Hospitals. How is a hospital supposed to schedule 2 weeks out? I mean, how are you supposed to do that? How about street fest? When you do all these great street fests from, you know, from Andersonville to Avondale to Hyde Park to South Shore, all these great street fests we have all throughout the year. What if it rains? How do you schedule 2 weeks out at a street fest when we don't even know the weather in Chicago from hour to hour? Think about a restaurant that has an outdoor cafe. You know, and if it rains, how are you supposed to schedule 2 weeks out? And how about this, Rick? We love our sports teams. How do we know? The Cubs right now, you know, we got a 2.5 game lead, which is great. So we think we're going to the playoffs. But what if we, God forbid, you know what I mean, we don't go to the playoffs? And then how does a restaurant bar schedule 2 weeks out when they don't know if the Cubs are going to be in the playoffs or not in 2 weeks?
Those are all very good questions, but I can assure you the Cubs will be in the playoffs.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay,
yeah.
I will.
Thank God for Javier Baez.
Yes.
Talk about a true Chicagoan that's going to carry us right into the playoffs.
Let's hope he makes MVP as well. Sam, one more time, for more information on Chicago Gourmet, where should people look?
Yes. So please, we got Sunday tickets, and you can go to September 30th, next Sunday, www.chicagogourmet.org.
All right. Well, Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association. Sam, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Rick. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week.
Very good. We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. Thursday marked the first debate of the Illinois governor's fall campaigns. The Governor Rauner and Democrat J.B. Pritzker rehashed their attack ads of who's the bigger liar, who's a failure, who's less trustworthy. But another interesting development, it wasn't just those two candidates. There was also the Libertarian candidate, Cash Jackson. There was also State Senator Sam McCann. He's a Republican, but he's running under the Conservative Party label. It was interesting that as the governor tries to repair divisions among social conservatives that nearly cost him renomination in March, he went after Sam McCann. McCann and the governor, there's some bad blood between them, and McCann is trying to exploit those social conservative divides and running as the Conservative Party candidate. Here's some of their exchange from the debate that was broadcast by NBC5.
Mr. McCann has been given far too much airtime in this discussion. He is a phony candidate.
Get used to
he
it, brother.
He has received
Get used to it.
Funding from Mike Madigan
Get used
for his
to
campaign.
It.
He was put on the ballot by Mike Madigan's attorney.
You're a
he
liar. You've been lying
purpose.
To the people of Illinois from the very beginning.
Mr.
You said you
McCann
would have no
McCann.
Social agenda, and all you've been able to accomplish
Mr.
is to make
McCann.
Yourself the most progressive
Mr.
liberal
McCann.
Governor the state of Illinois has ever had.
Mr.
You're
McCann.
A liar and a thief.
Mr.
Senator,
McCann, are
chance.
You getting paid on a per-interruption basis by Madigan or on a lump sum?
Here, I'm getting paid by the people to be here today.
He has one purpose on being on that stage and to help Mr. Pritzker be victorious for Mike Madigan.
No, we're
That's
here,
why
we're
Mr.
here to
McCann
take both
here.
Of you out.
There you go. So another great substantive discussion on the challenges facing Illinois ahead of us. Well, joining me now on the phone is Bradley Tusk. Bradley is the CEO of Tusk Ventures and Tusk Holdings. He's also out with a new book, The Fixer, My Adventures Saving Startups from Death by Politics. And Bradley was the former deputy governor during the early time of our now imprisoned former governor, Rod Blagojevich. Bradley, thanks for joining me this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It was fun to listen to that clip and be reassured that very little has changed.
That's why I saved that clip for your segment, because I thought you'd get a kick out of it. And
yeah, I did. It felt oddly familiar and comfortable.
Bring back the glory days. Well, you know, exactly. you've had, you know, just quite a career. You know, the people that you work for, Ed Rendell in Pennsylvania, Chuck Schumer, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and then there's Rod Blagojevich. And
the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And, you know, when you came to Illinois, when you were named as deputy governor, there were some people that just gave you flack. You know, who's this 20-something kid from New York, and he doesn't know how we play in Illinois, kind of thing. I like to think that I was not one of those critics, by the way.
Yeah, I don't recall you as being particularly hard on me when I came in. But look, in fairness to people who were, I understand, this 29-year-old kid from New York who was working for Bloomberg at City Hall, all of a sudden shows up to be the deputy governor and run the state. Like, I would be skeptical, too. My only hope is that by the time I left, they said, you know, we were better off having had him than not.
And in this book, The Fixer, you do have a couple of chapters in which you talk about your time with Blagojevich, and you don't spare any criticism.
No, it's a work of nonfiction, right? And there are people in this book who come off really well, like Mike Bloomberg, and there are people who come off badly, like Blagojevich or Anthony Weiner, and there are people mixed like Chuck Schumer and Travis Kalanick, and, you know, that's what it is.
Right.
It's what I saw in the time I was there.
Well, and you know, obviously we want people to buy the book, but I was taken by, and wrote about this in the Tribune, the story of how you were once forced to impersonate Rod Blagojevich in a phone call with Tom Ridge, who was then the Secretary of Homeland Security, and other governors participating in a basically a mock federal disaster drill 18 months after 9/11. And if you could you recount that story for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty shocking to me, and maybe shocking to the listeners too, which is we were only 18 months removed from 9/11, so tensions were pretty high, and the Department of Homeland Security would regularly conduct drills with different governors just so that if something bad did happen in real life, we were prepared for it. And this day happened to be our turn. It was us, seven other governors from around the country, and Tom Ridge. I go over to Blagojevich's house to make sure he gets on the call because, as probably listeners of the show know, he never really came to work. So if he really needed his attention, you had to go to his home. And when I got there, it was a chaos. He was yelling and screaming and ranting and raving. Even for him, it was a lot. And the reason why is that Dick Mell, who at the time was an alderman but also was Rod's father-in-law, and still is, I guess, had sent out a fundraising letter raising money for his next aldermanic campaign and said Blagojevich will be headlining it. All seems fairly normal, standard fare, except I guess Mel forgot to ask Rod for his permission to put him on the letter. I think to Mel was probably, of course, my son-in-law is going to come to this thing. Why wouldn't he? And
right.
I think for Rod, it was, you know, this guy doesn't respect me. He just thinks he's a puppet master. He's telling everyone that he's really in charge of the state. And he just totally lost it. And as he's yelling and screaming, I'm saying, hey, man, we got to get on this call. You know, what call? Tom Ridge. I thought, why do you think I'm here at your house? He said, I'm not doing it. I said, you have to do it. Homeland Security, governors, you know, stuff. He said, I'm too busy with this. And too busy meant, like, yelling at Chris Kelly and other people to make sure no one gave any money to Mel's fundraiser. Like, totally irrelevant. I said, this is more important than Homeland Security. He said, yes. So my plan was to just kind of like dial him beforehand, tell someone that would make up some emergency excuse and get off the call. But in my negotiating with Rod to try to get him to dial in, the time for the call had already started. So I dial in and the call is already underway. The rest of the governors are, of course, all on the call. Tom Ridge is, of course, on the call. And it just would have been like too weird to interrupt the whole thing because it was like a military exercise and explain, you know, that Rod wasn't available. So they finally went through the governors that they wanted us to authorize calling out the National Guard, and they did a few others, and they said Blagojevich, and I deepened my voice, which didn't even really make sense because it wasn't like Rod's voice was deeper than mine, but I said, yes, I approve sending out the National Guard. And then no one said, you know, who is this? And I was so relieved that no one questioned it. that, you know, he didn't have to speak again for the rest of the call, so I didn't say a word. Call ended, I hung up, looked around, he was still screaming in the other room, slipped right out the back and went back to the office.
Yeah, I in the article I wrote about you recounting the story and declaring a state of emergency, I kind of said that perhaps that should have been a precursor to what Illinois was really going to be in for with Rod Blagojevich as governor. We're speaking with Bradley Tusk, CEO of Tusk Ventures and Tusk Holdings, and author of the book, The Story of His Life So Far, The Fixer, My Adventures Saving Startups from Death by Politics. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. We're speaking with Bradley Tusk of Tusk Ventures and Tusk Holdings. Tuck, why did I keep saying Tuck? I can't say Tusk twice. Maybe, you're not out of sight, out of mind. I want you to know that, Bradley.
I appreciate that.
And author of The Fixer. And so, Bradley, you leave Illinois. As you reflect in the book that you kind of figured out why they picked you to be deputy governor because of all the other shenanigans that were going on and around. And so you leave Illinois, you go back to Michael Bloomberg, run his campaign, his re-election campaign, and then tell us about life after that.
Yeah, so it kind of took an interesting turn, which is, you know, after the Bloomberg campaign, I started a consulting firm to run, you know, big campaigns for big companies, not really that different than what a lot of people who come out of politics tend to do. And then I'm sitting in a Walmart meeting in the spring of 2011, and a friend of mine called and said, hey, there's a guy with a small transportation startup. He's having some regulatory problems. Would you mind talking to him? Next thing I know, I'm Uber's first political advisor. I get really lucky when Travis Kalanick, who was the founder and CEO of Uber, calls me back and says, I can't afford your fee. Would you take equity? And I didn't know what I was saying yes to, but I said yes anyway. And it turned out I took a whole bunch of equity in what ended up being the fastest growing startup in history during their Series A, which is sort of really early in the venture capital stage. And then spent the better part of the next 5 years kind of fighting the taxi cartel all over the U.S. so that ride-sharing could be made legal. We ended up making it legal in 384 different markets across the U.S. We had our big fights in Chicago, New York, L.A., Boston, you name it. We had a fight there. But what happened in that process was we figured out how do you mobilize your customers to fight back against interests that have a lot more campaign donations than you do, have a lot more lobbyists than you do, and how do you create a playbook for startups to deal with politics. So coming out of that, I created Tusk Ventures, which is a venture capital fund that works with and invests in startups in regulated industries. And so now we've invested in 15 different startups, worked with a couple of dozen, and sit at that intersection of tech and politics.
And I like how you kind of explain about that intersection with politics, because you kind of describe startups as interrupters.
Yeah. I mean, what made the 4 years I did spend in Illinois fun for all the craziness of dealing with Rod was in some ways because he wasn't really that actively participating in government. We came up with all kinds of interesting, weird ideas to try to make the state run better, whether it was, you know, knocking down all the toll booths on the tollway system and putting up public road tolling or universal health care for kids or prescription drugs from Europe and Canada. And that's what made the job exciting. And that's what tech is in many ways, too, which is, how do we look at the world, see what's not working, and do it a little better? And sometimes it could be a minor change, like just shifting from yellow taxis or white taxis in Chicago to Ubers, right? And sometimes it can be something pretty radical, like creating the internet itself or launching rockets to outer space. But either way, you're figuring out how to sort of do things differently, and that requires then a lot of fighting with the people who want them to be done the same. And that makes it both interesting and fun.
And because it's people kind of thinking outside the box and outside the status quo, then you run into status quo, and that's partly government institutions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a mix of two things. So part of it is the industries who are being disrupted and don't want change. That could be the casino industry not wanting to delegate any sports. It could be the hotel industry not wanting Airbnb. But also sometimes it's just government itself saying, like, what is this change? We don't want this. Things should only change when we say so. And they try to stifle it. So there's a chapter in the book about a startup called Lemonade. Lemonade is an insurance tech startup that sells property and rental casualty insurance. They're available in Illinois. And in New York, we couldn't get licensed, in part because the insurance industry didn't want the competition, but in large part simply because the state's Department of Financial Services just felt like it was up to them to decide who could get a license and when they could issue it and when they could sell insurance. And, you know, until we ran a campaign that went over their head and basically put Governor Cuomo in a tough enough spot that he knew that if he didn't force this through, he was going to look really bad, they would have stopped it. And I think part of the challenge is, you know, I can work with, invest in, call it a dozen startups at any given time, but there are 17,000 in the U.S. right now. And the other 16,988 shouldn't be subject to pay-to-play politics, to corruption, to bureaucratic interests, just deciding they don't feel like doing it. And that shouldn't be why innovation and competition doesn't happen. And maybe because the startup's idea isn't good enough, that's fine. But they should be at least able to compete.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, you cite the New York Department of Insurance. Some of these federal agencies, not federal agencies, but these governmental agencies, are as institutional as the institutions that they regulate.
Yeah, that, and plus there's also something called regulatory capture, which is the people who work in these agencies become so close with the interests of it and the industries that they oversee that they end up looking out for them. So, like, if you take the lottery, for example, the Illinois Lottery, all the mid-level people there, they hang out with all the G-Tech, scientific game vendors, and they go to each other's bachelor parties, and they play golf, and, you know, they become friends. And then all of a sudden, when a disrupting lottery company comes along, instead of saying, what would be best for the state, they say, how do I protect my friends? And you see that in every industry in every state.
I want to ask you, too, about, since you know Michael Bloomberg very well, and now we have the former mayor discussing running as a Democratic contender for president of the United States. I kind of wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, Mike, you know, this, it came up about a week or so ago when he was out in San Francisco for a climate change conference. And the main point he was making is, in 2016, there was arguably a path for him to run as an independent. In fact, there's a chapter in the book about how we put together the campaign to do that, and I had a great take a lead from my company and run the campaign had he done that. In 2020, people are so polarized and so partisan, because either you hate Trump or you love Trump, that there's just not really a path for an independent in 2020, in our view. So whether Mike runs or not, that's still very much an open question, but if he does run, it would have to be as a Democrat, and that's what he was acknowledging. There's a lot about Mike that clearly would make him a terrific candidate. Frank Bruning, today's New York Times, has a really good op-ed piece about that. And there are things about Mike that make him a challenge to get through a Democratic primary. So, you know, whether he runs, I don't really know. I know he'd be good at doing the job. I'm not sure that we can get to that spot.
I guess that's something will be, and how many other contenders will there be in 2020 on the Democratic side?
Man, it could be 20 easily, right? I mean, you know, in my home state of New York alone, Cuomo, Gillibrand, Booker, who's right next door in New Jersey, even without Mike, that's, if you put Mike in there, that's four from one state, basically. So it's going to be a lot.
Lots to stay tuned for. Bradley Tusk, CEO of Tusk Ventures and Tusk Holdings, author of The Fixer, My Adventures Saving Startups from Death by Politics, which you can find at Amazon and leading bookstores. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Gary Chico, candidate for mayor of Chicago, Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association, and Bradley Tusk, former Illinois deputy governor in the Blagojevich era and author of the book The Fixer. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And